Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Now, hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, in this wonderful island-chained nation in the Fukushima-irradiated South Pacific. And everybody got a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb to help the economy. My very special guests are still with us, Randy Powell and Daniel Nunez. Their websites are Randy's Donuts Movie, coming this fall to a cinema near you, and onestopenergies.com for Daniel Nunez. Now, we were making jokes about cops and donuts and stuff like that over the break and what have you. And apparently, Daniel, he didn't do donuts no more. He didn't even do a Dunkin' Donuts coffee no more.
No, gone vegan. Dunkin' Donuts. Gone vegan. Well, yeah, that's part of the sustainable earth. We believe all cruelty-free is the way to go. I mean, you look at these images. Well, a lot of people don't want to look at them. They don't want to watch the videos for Food Matters and things like that, where they actually show what's going on with these animals. But, yeah, we watched them, and, you know, it was a life-changing couple of videos that we were informing ourselves on. So we decided to go cruelty-free and just live off of fruits, vegetables, and you know, it's really not that bad. People think that being vegan is like something like it's horrible, and no, actually you can season your food up pretty nicely, and you really won't miss it if you're eating right. So I believe Randy's also vegan or vegetarian, Randy?
I am most of the time. Yeah, I haven't been 100% pure, but I've been definitely involved. I mean, 95% of my diet is vegan. You know, I eat a little fish here and there, but really, yeah, I mean, I've been involved in the vegan thing for a long time. My wife and I founded a organic raw food restaurant here in Charlotte, North Carolina, which is still going, and she's more taking the reins of that now. But it's called Luna's Living Kitchen. People can see that on the web at lunaslivingkitchen.com, and we do all kinds of organic, you know, juices, and working with the local community and local farmers, and trying to do the whole thing sustainable. And, you know, the next step is then trying to implement cleaner and cleaner technologies, because it's amazing. I mean, even doing the most conscientious, absolute, and believe me, you try and run a restaurant in particular with integrity, and you find out really quick what real integrity means and how hard it is. And I'm very proud of what we've done and being able to maintain that. It took a lot of years of suffering and eating dirt to do it, but we have been able to maintain it and make it successful. But it'll really make you think about what's going on out there in the restaurants and different things. But even running the most conscientious, sustainable organization possible, doing every single thing from all the different kinds of recycling and composting and local farmers and less of any kind of products or packaging or anything, even then, it's amazing how unsustainable our whole lifestyle is right now on the planet, and how much trash we're producing and how much everything. And you know, that's again, probably the most conscious place in, you know, it's a tiny little business. And, you know, so when you think about what's really going out there in all the cities and how much waste we're producing, it's really crucial. And that, you know, it's something that I've been focusing on a lot recently with people, is that, you know, our endeavors with the coil and all this is one thing, and it's part of the implications of these discoveries that we've started to break ground on and which need to be further explored and worked on in and of themselves. But like an engineer friend of mine said, we know that the phi ratio is real. We know that these spirals exist in nature. It's established. It's there. We observe it. Now, someone may invent, a musical speaker or horn or something based on the phi ratio. And he said, you know what? It may or may not improve the sound. And that doesn't mean that the phi ratio doesn't exist. And it just mm-hmm. means that we haven't fully figured out how to tap into it or what it means or what its implications are. So it's important that in all these different topics, we keep a really open mind. But regardless of whether or not my solutions are the answer, or Marco's or Daniel's or any of us, we've all got a piece of it. But regardless of whether or not it is the answer, the point is, and the point that I'm trying to really get across in this movie, is that this conversation is the only conversation to be had. Every other conversation is frivolous. And all technology is frivolous, except the technology which is seeking to liberate us into personal energy independence. That is true liberation, but it does mean radical changes for even the whole condition of the nation state in the world today, period.
I was just thinking about this. We said earlier in the interview that everything in the universe is cyclical. And what it reminded me of is the fact that we currently have a paradigm of cyclical consumption. And that cyclical consumption is an artificially created thing because of planned obsolescence. If we built things frickin' last, a whole bunch of these really massive scumbaggery corporations would simply be built up, and then everybody would have their products, and then they'd have to disappear or invent something new that people can use. Right. Whereas at the moment, you just build things to break down, and that ensures that you keep in business, selling the same old crap every frickin' day to idiots who don't have a choice.
Yeah, I mean, all these companies now, like Apple products and all that, everything's got a different adapter and different plan. They make a lot of money off all these accessories, and that's the world of business, which is why, we're trying to subvert that by doing things openly, even though it's a slower and more difficult process in some ways. But I think it is true. But the essence of technology, I mean, what you have in a phone now used to be, buildings full of computers didn't contain that. And, the whole basement of MIT didn't contain even a fraction of what's on your phone now. And the essence of that is it's a convergence of applications. One device is now your music, your clock, your telephone, mm-hmm. your camera, everything, and that's just one example of what's going on in the computer world. But the truth is, this idea which Vortex Math is presenting in the form of a mathematical construct, an idea of a torus and a proposed solution, but the essence of the concept is the necessary conversation, which is an idea that converges all technologies in one. So it becomes your transportation. It is your shelter. It is a mobile shelter. It is your computer. It is your sound system. It is your navigation system, your GPS. It is its own energy source. It does produce your food. And people are doing, approaching these ideas with things like the airships and stuff. They're not necessarily like moving, but different sustainable mm-hmm. housing things that are going on where you can grow your own food and do all that. But essentially, if technology is not going to go away, I think as Marco has said, it's a gauntlet. And we have to run it and hopefully come out good on the other side. But there's no choice but to try and run it. So we have to, not just with what I'm doing, but everybody, this is about generating the conversation that we have to search for the essence of the ultimate technology. We have to figure out how it works, because the game of technology and of human population growth and of everything that we're doing, ultimately, it has to be transcending the planet, transcending the biosphere, having limitless abilities with travel, just like we are finding with information and communication. And so, this idea is the idea that everybody needs to be working on, whether they're doing it through vortex-based mathematics or through other discoveries that they make, which may or may not converge. It doesn't really matter. the only axiom that matters is you can't argue with success. So if you've got it and you can make it work and you can be coherent with the idea and ultimately turn it into something, then this is valuable for the cause. And that's what this is all about.
I was also thinking about another idea, which was mobile settlements. So I had this idea of a moving skyscraper. So you had like massive caterpillar tracks or something like that underneath the foundations, where if it was necessary, you could move an entire tall building very, very slowly, of course, but you could actually migrate massive populations like that without the need for new settlements and constructions and things like that. Simply, like if you've ever heard of the movie Howl's Moving Castle, for example, because yeah. I think what's really happening here in human society is that we approach into these areas because they've got good harbors or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. And there's all these things that change, you know, like water might run out or the sea level might rise or things like that. And it occurs to me that becoming sort of hyper-technologically advanced nomads would really be quite an interesting area of research and development to get into in terms of sustaining human population size and also being able to move to different areas where resources have not been depleted, while resources in the locations where we previously lived allowed to replenish, as it were.
Definitely.
Yeah,
it's like crowding around a dirty water hole.
Yeah, I mean, if you have that that type of travel capabilities, what people are witnessing with a lot of the UFO phenomena, be they our own inventions or something from elsewhere, whatever it is, it's a secret to us. But the evidence is overwhelming that it is there, and Daniel's seen it, and I've seen it. And, you know, it's very incontrovertible once you experience it, and it transformed your whole idea of what technology is capable of. And that's what really turned me on to the ideas of this math, and the fact that there was a coherent math behind it, is that, ultimately what we're talking about is what they call a reactionless drive, which means it's unaffected by the weight that it carries. It creates its own gravity. So you very much could move any amount, any size of anything using this device at its ultimate engineered application, where it becomes its own internal, its own closed system, if you will, its own universe.
Definitely. It's not too far-fetched either, because when you think about things like the Hutchinson effect, which is, simply you have a copper coil sitting atop of an aluminum sheet, and you put enough voltage into that copper coil, it floats on top of the aluminum. It's the Hutchinson effect. So if they can do that, or they have things like electrostatic flyers that are basically aluminum triangles excited at high voltage, and they find that they lift off the ground, they have these technologies already working. So, it's just a matter of integrating things that already work. Or how about the SEG generator from Professor John Searle? That's another interesting device that has the potential of lifting up off the ground. So it's pretty amazing stuff that's all real. And as Randy said, part of our inspiration coming into all this was seeing orbs. We saw a number of orbs in the sky, and Erica and I, we started calling them our friends and looking at them and trying to figure out how those things would be possible. And one of the most recent ones that we saw was over in Oregon. We took a trip out there, and we saw five orbs, fiery balls in the sky, just come into the atmosphere and one by one shoot back out from wherever they came from. And it was pretty amazing that, like, literally just, let's say, 1,000 feet up. And, it's definitely something that makes you question the reality that we experience today and our own limitations that we set for ourselves, and think about new possibilities.
Well, and this is another thing, because thinking about new possibilities requires a form of creativity, right? And I'm of the opinion that currently, when you talk about industry or technological development, a lot of the people who own these massive companies, research labs, things like that, they don't have an overabundance of creativity. They have a competitive mindset rather than a creative mindset. And it's not competition as in, I'm going to make something better than yours and we're going to compete against each other and you'll have to create something better and then I'll create something better. And meanwhile, everybody benefits per stage of these people competing. That's not what they think about. What they think about is, how can I sabotage this other person who's trying to create stuff that's better than mine to prevent him from doing anything so that I don't have to do anything either?
Yeah,
I mean, it's the best way to keep everything slowed down and poor quality. I mean, in a perfect example, if you look at, you look at martial arts, it used to be this very extreme private thing held secret within families and secret societies, and you had to suffer years and do crazy feats just to get somebody to show you how to do some punch or something, you know, and that goes on for thousands and thousands of years, and then finally they get a good fighting competition and all the fighters suck, and then, you know, all these fighters start opening up and all the martial arts get shared and people start inventing and improving upon it. Then you have something go like the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or things like that now, where it's evolved so much, and you know the game evolves so much because of the opening of the information and the sharing and the growth of it, which was eventually very, you know, which was originally very controversial to take it even outside of small groups and the family. It was their guarded secret. But ultimately, when we get rid of the paranoia and we let go of our secrets, yes, somebody may become more advanced. People, eventually, it's always been my hope that people will take this math far into the advance of what I've been able to do with it. And I'm only going to get there by teaching, you know, and by sharing that, not by trying to keep it to my own privatized secret. It just holds everybody back. I mean, if Newton had privatized calculus, you know, I mean, where would we be? You know, if he never taught anybody, never shared it, kept it a secret, instead of advancing the civilization as he did, you know. Now, some people will always argue, and I might be one of them, that if you don't, somebody else is going to figure it out and share it. So it will, the information will be liberated eventually, but, you know, we're just taking the approach of being the ones to start that paradigm and to help sharing it.
Well, I just say, if somebody else ain't doing it already, then you realize that you have the responsibility now. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show. The show that's all about energetic organized crime and various other forms of scumbaggery as well, where we try to keep the power grid real, real low, so no mofo can ever really challenge it.
And welcome back to my very special guests. What have we got here? We've got Randy Powell and Daniel Nunes. And I don't know what it is about the name Randy, which I find really amusing, and the fact that he's got like this awesome sort of Sherlock Holmes villain mustache just makes it even that more awesome. All right. Well, anyway.
Well, you know, there was another famous Randy. I think that was Randy Pan, the Goat Boy. So being that you're a Bill Hicks fan, you know, there's always Randy Pan, the Goat Boy.
Yeah, and the Macho Man, Randy Savage.
No, obviously the greatest wrestler who ever lived.
Of course. And we were talking over the break about how when you come up with original ideas, I've noticed that what people do is they tell other people what these ideas are. And in the process of telling other people what these ideas are, the motivation for actually implementing that idea themselves diminishes. So the more people you tell about your idea, the less work you actually do on it, and your idea eventually disappears into nothingness. You ever notice that?
That's an interesting insight for sure. I guess I'm really screwed then, because I've told a lot of people But yeah, you can definitely burn yourself out with the talk. And, that's the problem is finally now I'm getting to this place where we're going to do a movie and do this and that. And I'm almost really burned out on explaining this stuff because I've done it so much and said the same things and been over the same topic so many times that you can get in that frame where you just want to move on and do something else. And it's not really that I want to move on. I just want to evolve in the work. You don't want to be a black belt at something and still teaching the basic move to the white belts forever. You know, eventually you want somebody else to be able to do that so that you can explore more your art and try and improve it. And I have a lot of work in the math and the geometry of this that that needs to be explored. And at this point, it's so complex. Even though it's based on very simple principles, visually it becomes so complex that it requires 3D computer modeling. So we have great artists working with us now. I just put up a new video up on Facebook that's on YouTube as well, done by my good friend Tom Barnett, who worked with me even years ago exploring these concepts. And he did a lot of the animations that were in the TED Talk that I did. And, he's doing fantastic animation work. Our good friend Chuck is doing a lot of incredible web work, and he's built a whole interactive vortex-based mathematics website, which I forget the name of right off of my mind, but I'll send you that link. But it's a place where people can actually go in and move these toruses around and look at them from different angles. But it's still, again, a very nascent thing that needs to be, because the more complex side of the math requires a lot of work, and it's all volunteer at this point. And I'm trying to, because I chose not to go the business route with the energy stuff, I'm trying to do that in the entertainment realm and create books and films and share the information, both documentary style sharing of the information and also developing fictional film concepts that can help explain these ideas and teach people about them through entertaining stories and different things like that. So all of that is in the works to try and also help fund the exploration of further aspects of the math and the technology as well.
Well, so you see, this is the interesting part about it, is that you can either do two things. You can either explain to people what you're doing, or you can do things that are unexplainable to most people. I don't know if people quite understand this yet. Ultimately, you don't need people to understand what you're doing. You actually need to just do what you're doing.
I agree. Right. I agree. The truth is, this is a lot of both. It is constantly explaining the unexplainable, and it is its own kind of Ouroboros and its own contradiction. But I think, you just have to live with that contradiction, and you have to keep... That's why we do everything backwards. You know, science is looking for an explanation for everything. I don't believe that there is an explanation for everything. In fact, I don't even believe that the universe was ever created, if that isn't bizarre enough. I believe that it is eternal, and that the past and future are both infinite and as incomprehensible as that is to us. But it's a bounded infinity, you know? It's a spinning, closed system. What was the point I was going to make there? I don't know. I lost it, but I don't know. I was saying something right before that, and that statement just threw my mind off in the other direction. But anyway, we're just trying to find a way to apply these things and get these ideas implemented. I know there was some grand point I had there, but it just the brain clogged.
It happens.
Oh, we were talking about trying to explain the unexplainable. What I was saying was that essentially you have to approach things from the sense that it is a mystery. And so the explanations are just little gifts that the mystery allows us to get, which are almost just like little facets on a crystal, little perspectives and ways of looking at the unity which is there. So everyone's perspective has some merit, but they all fit in a different place. And certainly there are mixes of right and wrong and what everybody is saying, because it is a perspective on the whole, but it is just one perspective. And, it's always a contradiction, but we try to approach things from the mystery and look at numbers themselves as a mystery and then try to decrypt the answers out of that mystery. So the whole explanation is always elusive, and you could talk forever and never exhaust it. And yet, that's ultimately what we want, something, an inexhaustible well of information that can constantly be derived, because no embodied being, I don't think, can comprehend it all at once.
It seems to be a split in it, like whether or not you're wanting to find the answers or whether or not you're trying to better simply understanding the questions.
Observer's law?
Yeah.
The double slit experiment.
In a way, you know.
The double slit experiment, you say, Daniel? What was that?
Yeah. It's like the double slit, right, where the observer looks at the experiment and the outcome changes. So it's like the roots of alchemy, or the roots of all science, rather, right? You have the scientist, or the person who's trying to learn about these natural laws has to be in tune enough to separate themselves from the experiment, just enough to actually find something. Because otherwise, the more you're seeking for it, the more you're looking at it in a very close way, it's just not going to happen. So it's an interesting phenomenon there.
Well, it's true as well. And I found just in my personal life doing this radio show and things like that, occasionally I'll be burnt out and my brain will just turn to crap and I don't know what the hell's going on and that kind of thing. And if I take a week or two off, and I mean off, like not answering emails or Skype messages or looking at Facebook or doing anything to do with my work, when I come back, suddenly my brain's back as well. And it's firing on all cylinders, even greater than it was before. It's an interesting phenomenon that is, like, if you take a step back from your intense involvement, your involvement becomes more intense.
That's right. Well, that's touching back on what you were talking about before, also with looking at bringing out new ideas or new discoveries. And the more you talk about it, the more it gets worn out. Well, a lot of people, they don't realize that, energy researchers are also people. So you'll get a lot of people asking questions about these things. And when they see you doing some mundane activity, like in the supermarket or something, it's just like, whoa, you're here at the supermarket. But, it's like, you also have to be in line with the finer things of life, which is just enjoying life and having time, let's say, for your kids or for your family, for, yourself. And, it's very important to regroup that element to it, because when you don't, then you suffer the getting tired of talking about the same thing all the time, because that's just part of it. You have to recharge that battery.
Yeah, and other people get tired of what you're talking about too. It's like, what was it? If you love your work, it burdens the people that you love, whereas if you hate your work, it burdens you.
That's right. That's right. It's very interesting. But we're all human, and we're all connected in ways that are yet to be understood, and that's a beautiful thing. One thing that crossed my mind when we were talking about that whole energy concept of this ever-expanding energy. So just on a for instance, to relate it back to the technology, you have, let's say, a set output of 300 volts. You can plug in 300 volts worth of LEDs into these coils and light those LEDs. Now, what would normally happen if you exceed that, you wouldn't get any light. But instead, what the coils do, they expand how much their voltage output is as you plug in more lights to the output. So what you get is a higher voltage as you plug in more things. You also have a field that the coils create that actually expands. So instead of you having a magnetic field that's, let's say, 15 feet, it expands to 20. As you plug in more lights, it expands to 25. So these are some interesting things that also tie into pretty much what you guys were saying with this ever-expansive energy. You know, and what ends up happening right now on, you know, you have a coil that will pretty much start spewing out ozone. You get a lot of ozone production, and they destroy themselves if they're not designed for that particular purpose. So that's an interesting characteristic where we can actually start, you know, sanitizing rooms so we can create clean rooms. We could structure water. We could purify, you know, a lot of toxins that are in the air for, let's say, doctor's offices or, you know, schools, things like that. So, you know, a lot of potentials, you know, right here, right now, and using these concepts that, you know, are present everywhere.
Well, I found that the world is full of things that you can use if only you had the presence of mind to use them. And what I find very strange about the energy industry is that they operate under old ideas, old concepts, and I don't ever seem to see new research, new developments coming out of the major energy conglomerates or anything like that. It seems like they're not interested in creating energy in any new way, shape, or form. They're just not interested.
That's why it's up to us. I mean, you know, if other people aren't very interested because they've, you know, they've had their years worth of work, and, you know, a lot of people, you know, they've had a set number of years. I mean, a lot of people took 12 years of schooling to come to the level where they're at now, where they can finally start engaging back in life as, you know, just normal people. And they don't really want to burden the workload and get back into a lot of new discoveries, you know. So that's something that has to be understood as well when we talk about how people want to shut things down or, you know, sabotage other new developments. It's really that, you know, what we end up doing by opening up the doors with new development is, you know, increasing work, which is something that I also feel that we need right now. You know, a lot of people are without jobs, without things to do, and just happens to be that a lot of these coils are going to have to be hand wound. So, you know, it's a beautiful thing when you think of it. You know, you have very elaborate technologies that are using very simple, inexpensive materials, but they do need working hands. So, you know, it's something that could help out the economy in ways that a lot of people are just still unaware of.
Well, I also think that the concept of working, we've gone from the agrarian culture where people were working, you know, usually very close to home on fields or things of that nature, just in order to survive, right? Then we went into urbanization culture where people would travel to specific areas like big cities and things like that, and they would work in factories all clustered together, and they'd be able to produce income that's even greater than just what it takes to sustain themselves. And this is what created the middle class. I think there's going to be a new energy and urbanization sort of revolution here, whereby people, the idea of work to me is really redundant in a lot of ways, because we've got the ability to create technologies that make working almost pointless. You know, it would be cool That's right. if we had automatic food, automatic energy, and then what the hell else do you really need to work for if you've got unlimited food and unlimited energy? The answer is
not a lot.
The answer is not a lot. And what kind of new challenges would that provide for society where everybody says you're not you and you're not worthy unless you've got a slave job? We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeswoodshow.com.
To fly to New Zealand by plane from New York City, it takes 22 hours. So from the Twin Cities, 19. I mean, I fly all the time, and 6 hours on a plane is like a lot, and 19 is wrong. And they distract you. They feed you, and then they feed you some more, and then they feed you. Give me a dessert. Give me a dessert. Give me a dessert. Have your dessert, you prick. Give me that dessert. Have a Bloody Mary. Yeah, give me a whiskey sour. Yeah, give me whatever you got. Just more liquor, more liquor, more liquor. And then when you're done, there's still 16 hours to go. If you want to know what it's like, you can experience going to New Zealand. It's very simple. Sit in a chair for 19 hours and take your hands and press your head as hard as you can. And don't stop. Don't stop! 19 hours, just like this. And then at the end of 19 hours, you pull your hands off and you feel like you're in New Zealand.
Welcome back.
You certainly won't feel like you're home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand. And incidentally, that's a great clip to be saying. It's Lewis Black talking about how long it takes to get to New Zealand, you know, like 19 hours on a plane. And we were talking over the break about teleportation. And really, if that technology could be implemented, you know, like a Grand Central Teleport or, you know, your doormat is a teleportation device or something of that nature, you know, it would eliminate so many of these interesting problems that we have, you know. I was just thinking about this the other day, guys, is that I spend like 10 hours a day doing this work and what have you, whereas previously, if I had a slave job, I would be migrating in some way, shape or form for about 2 hours a day and working for eight. So the fact that I don't even have to move means I put the same amount of work in anyway. And I think that if we were capable of making transportation instantaneous, transport problems gone, shipping industry gone, airlines and any associated risk and everything like that gone, the problem with your food and stuff like that not being grown locally gone, all of these massive problems that we've really had to deal with for the most part in the 20th century just disappear. Right? Mm. Quite literally, they get dematerialized and zapped away like somebody in a frickin' Star Trek convention. It would be really, really cool. And as we were talking about, if we can imagine it, then it surely must be possible. I don't think it's possible for human beings to imagine things that simply cannot exist. If they don't exist right now, then surely if you can imagine it, you can do it.
That's right. Well, we have to realize that we operate on a lot of assumptions, too, about possibilities that aren't necessarily founded on observation or could ever be founded on observation, and so we just make certain assumptions. I think a really important one is that, we talk all the time about the laws of nature and the laws of physics and the laws of the cosmos. You know, the funny thing is, when you look at every science except for physics, all these sciences are evolutionary. And yet, then when you get to physics, you have these eternal laws, no one's observed that. I mean, that's, you know, people criticize me for saying that energy is eternal. And I say, well, you guys use the word eternal all the time. You talk about these eternal laws of physics and this and that, these set laws of nature. And yet that's never been proven. When you look at the way that we behave, we tend to have two different types of behavior, one of which we favor and the other of which is much more prevalent. The prevalent thing that we have is habits, habitual behavior. We do the same things over and over. Like we were saying before, you say the same things over and over again. It's just like Jude Law in that I Heart Huckabee's movie, you know, where he's always telling the same story. We're in a kind of Groundhog Day of repetition, and we hate it. We recognize about ourselves. We hate when we become cliche. We hate it when other people are cliche. And everybody values something original, somebody who's unique, somebody who does it differently, somebody who's walking a different way. And those people are always the people that influence culture and move it ahead eventually, even if they destroy themselves in the process, which is often the case. It's the same thing with physics. We're talking about laws, but what we may be observing are simply, just like in evolution, habitual behaviors of nature that are awaiting innovation. And so even the work that that we've done so far and the work that Daniel has done, regardless of whether or not it is at 100% implementation stage on the largest levels, what it has done is shown fairly conclusively that certain of our assumptions about so-called laws of electricity are not entirely valid. So, you know, as proof of concept, what Daniel is doing is gold. I mean, because it is showing that whether it's out of my work or something else that he's doing, he's tapped into and is tapping into something that is currently unknown. And so even though our models may all be provisional as we search for perfection, and they may be constantly refined as we search for perfection and we clear away inconsistencies from them, I think that it doesn't really matter as long as the work you were doing, as you were saying, the actual thing that you do has shown that something that we thought was law is in fact not necessarily the case. And that's, those are the beginnings of real innovation, I think.
Mm-hmm. And also I've got the idea, the word revolution gets thrown around a lot. Have you noticed that? To the point where saying that we're going to have a revolution or an energy revolution or something in itself becomes a cliche, like a cliche Guevara or something like that. I had this concept that revolution is simply to go in a circle. And as you were talking about life and the universe and energy itself is also cyclical. So the concept that there's nothing new under the sun really seems to ring true for me because of the fact that I've never been able to observe eternity, right? As you were saying, you know, you can't say this law is eternal or that's eternal or anything of that nature because, hey, nobody who claims that there's such a thing as eternity has lived through eternity, have they? So they can't say it. And we don't know most of the time how things really work or what things might turn into. It's just a world of possibilities. And I think the only people that really accomplish nothing are those who deny possibilities and prevent others from exploring and really trying to develop things. There's two types of people in the world, forward-looking people and backward-looking people. Backward-looking people are just like, it's like driving a car and all you can see is the rear view mirror, you know? They'll never actually make plot a course through life or change this world for the better or anything like that because they're simply riding on past achievements of others, you know, on the shoulders of giants, as it were. It's the forward-looking people who have no idea, you know, balls to the wall, fly by the seat of the pants type of individuals who take massive risks, I think, that actually truly chart a positive course for humanity. You know, people like yourselves.
But there's also the balance of being the person in the middle of that, the people that live in the now. That's when you start experiencing the synergistic type occurrences where you look at the time and it's always the same, or, you know, you think of someone and they instantly appear, and, you know, that's when you're living in the now that you're not expecting, you're not anticipating, you're not looking back and comparing, but just simply living in the now and realizing that things just happen for a reason. You know, and that's where the magic really starts happening, where we all rediscover those things, that because we all have actually, if the universe is a cyclical, if there is this revolution of energy, then we all have lived through it and we all just forgot. Now, to rediscover that or to rediscover the synergy of it all and how to live in the now, that's where the magic happens. Because, that's where you find the most happiness. It's where the breakthroughs come in.
I think that's where it's also important to connect those two concepts, which are revealed so simply and eloquently by the mathematics, which is that there are two interacting systems, one of which is a spiral and a cycle, and a convergence and divergence and you know, disintegration and reintegration. And that is the way of the physical world that we live in. And the other is the way, I believe, of the spirit, the spiritual world, or the mental world, consciousness world, whatever you want to call it, which is much more like a field, what they talk about as a field in physics. It's non-local, it's spread out over space. It's not, I don't believe, simply confined to the body, which is why you have, you know, four people coming up with calculus in the same years, or all these different people discovering evolution in the same year, or, you know, these kind of synchronistic occurrences, like Daniel was saying. I think ultimately that linear system, which is the what brings novelty and innovation into the world, is in many ways in contradiction with the cyclical habitual patterns of the world, and yet they are one. And so you can really experience both sides of it. But revolution without evolution, is simply spinning on its heels. You know, it just each new freedom fighter becomes another dictator, and it's all pointless.
Yeah. Well, that's what we need, ladies and gentlemen. We need evolution, not a revolution. We don't want to go in circles and just keep spinning our wheels. We want to change something permanently. Make it better. Make it different. Living the same way and doing the same things for the entire existence of the rest of humanity is fracking pointless, in my opinion. Let's have a point to our existence, shall we? Let's live in the now. Make it happen. Daniel Nunes, Randy Powell, OnStopEnergies.com, RandyStonesMovie.com, and incidentally, LunasLivingKitchen.com. Thank you very much, and we'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen.